hunter gatherer genes, not strong.
No, I am a 2024 man. Right. Okay, you know that's
proud 2024.
Look, I was born in the right era. Right, right. I need to live here in this time frame. If you know, give me a bow and arrow, send me out to hunt a buffalo. No, thank you. Right, like I need to know. I need to be able to look at a menu of a restaurant a week in advance. You know, that's the era I am in.
Right, yeah. Either that or you need to bring back the feudal system and be in charge.
Yeah, even then, you know, like, do they got a menu? Like, because I gotta
peasant, bring me a menu.
I gotta brainstorm how I'm gonna respond to the waiter or waitress. What am I gonna say? You know. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Petra Nazaroff. With me, but not as always, Pastor Cassandra Nagel.
Hello, people of the future.
And always, Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Okay, Pastor David, he's on a retreat somewhere.
He's boondoggle.
Puerto Rico.
And I'd like to go on a retreat in Puerto Rico.
I know.
You know? Technically, he's learning things.
Yeah.
The photo he posted on Facebook was him on the beach. So
It was his feet on the beach. Which is a bold move to put your feet on the internet for
a
free.
A foot pick, yeah.
I thought about commenting on that, and I was like, you know, a lot of people I go to church with are going to see me say that on Instagram.
Sure.
So I didn't, but I'm saying it now for what it's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, so he is not with us. He chose this Puerto Rican conference.
Yeah, I think it's like a senior pastor conference. So
interesting.
He and Amanda are at a resort.
Okay.
We are so sad for them.
Yeah. Yeah, the youth director conferences were not in Puerto Rico.
My friend just went to a big youth director conference. It was at Princeton.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Very cool.
Do you think there are any youth directors that have graduated from Princeton?
No, that's a waste of going to Princeton. If you want to be a director,
well, like,
trust me, do not
go
to Princeton.
At the Princeton Seminary. Princeton has a seminary. So there was like, yeah. So I do think there are people who have master's degrees who then become youth directors, like my friend, who's a pastor.
But. Wow.
That's a waste of time. Go to some place.
Yeah. Your friend's on blast.
He's a pastor. He's not a youth director.
He's the pastor of Children, Youth, and Family Ministry. So, yeah.
Children, youth, and family.
He fills the youth director role. As clergy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're travelers.
Yes.
Have you ever stayed in a Motel 6?
No.
No, for a specific reason.
What is that? I mean, it's a cheap hotel.
It is
or
a cheap
motel.
Hotel. Yeah. My dad thinks he almost got murdered at a Motel 6 one time.
One time. Okay.
So we have never stayed in one.
Okay. Is it, you know, was it the part of the country or is it just the Motel 6 that you think did it?
He thinks it was the Motel 6. So somebody like watched him and followed him and all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
so like I kind of just carried that with me into my adulthood and I just don't stay at Motel 6.
I have stayed at a Motel 6 several times in my life. So
Wow. Yeah.
How was it? Okay.
Probably exactly what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
Once in Vegas.
Okay.
So, you know, again, exactly what you would expect.
Did they have a casino?
They did not have a casino. I did stay at a really cheap hotel in Vegas with a casino, and it was very sad.
Is that Arizona Charlie's?
It was Arizona Charlie's, yeah. Yes. It was very sad. I played blackjack next to a guy who was crying, and I'm like,
oh no.
I can't. I'm done. I can't do this. Like, this is not a fun gambling, you know, excursion.
Right. This you don't feel good about that.
This is, I'm surrounded by addiction, you know, and it makes me really sad. Yeah. Yes. Well, here's a Motel 6 in Biloxi. I mean, if you're going to Biloxi, right?
Why not the Motel 6?
Maybe Motel 6 is fine.
Summer vacation plans.
It's fine establishment. It's now offering Garfield-themed rooms to guests.
Oh, no, I'm going to have to go to this. My kid's obsessed with Garfield.
Okay. She likes really?
She is.
Her and, you know, 60-year-olds.
Right. Yep. I had a bunch of Garfield comic books from when I was a kid, and she actually learned to read off of comic books. She sort of self-taught from comic books, and so that's how she got into Garfield.
Okay, for me, it's Calvin and Hobbes. But
I love Calvin and Hobbes.
My parents love Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah. Yeah. Not to make you feel old. Sorry.
We do already. Yeah, it's fine.
That's fine. all right. So, would you want to stay at a Garfield themed hotel or Motel 6 in Biloxi?
No, I would not.
Yeah. Do you think murder is a possibility?
I mean, it's a Garfield themed hotel. Of course, murder is a possibility. I mean, motels in general.
Are there cats at the Garfield Motel?
Probably some street cats, right. You know, I would imagine.
Not on purpose.
Is it closed on Mondays?
Bed bugs.
Doesn't he hate Mondays?
Mm-hmm. He does hate Mondays. Loves
lasagna. Loves lasagna. At their breakfast buffet.
Breakfast lasagna.
Motel 6 does not have a breakfast buffet. I've clearly never stayed in a Motel 6.
No, I'm a Best Western.
If there's a breakfast option.
Right. If somebody offers you food at Motel 6, don't eat it.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever stayed at a motel instead of just a hotel? So motel, doors on the outside, doors facing parking lot.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I have. Yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't believe lasagna is being served there, but I mean, I'll show you the picture here. It's all orange.
Oh my. Is that pizza? Oh. Like a pizza blanket on the bed?
I think it's, it looks like a pizza blanket, but he's more into lasagna.
Yeah,
not. Maybe Motel 6 could not.
Well, how do you make a lasagna blanket? Look kind of weird.
Did they get the official licensing for this, or is this all the fake Mickey Mouse type stuff?
WLOX local news does not tell me. If they have it. I assume. I don't know how litigious Garfield is. I mean, Mickey would definitely be all over this.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, there's a Garfield movie coming out this summer.
Okay.
Isn't there already like a weird animated one that came out?
Yes.
Right?
So there was, yeah, I mean, there's weird fake animation. Garfield is animated, but in a real world.
Right.
Voiced
right.
by Bill Murray. This, I think, is all animated. Chris Pratt is Garfield.
Oh. Wow.
Chris Pratt is Garfield.
I might actually watch it then.
Right.
To hear his voice?
Well, because he's well known, right? Just from wanting to be aware.
Just curiosity. Pure curiosity. What does Chris Pratt bring to the Garfield character?
Yeah, I don't know. Here's what Garfield had to say in a press release, though, from Motel 6. I love seeing myself on the big screen, so I figured, hey, let's double down on my big break and take a new position for the first ever Chris Pratt chief pet officer from Motel 6. As you'll see in my new movie, I know firsthand how good it feels to be welcomed with a nice place to sleep. Huh. When I think a nice place to sleep, I don't think Motel 6
I don't know.
In Biloxi.
We got two of the three place to sleep.
Maybe the only thing on the TVs will be the movie. That's the only thing playing on loop.
Yeah. We'd like to revise our opinion on whether or not hell exists from last week.
That's the worst thing that happens to you at a Motel 6 is you're forced to watch the Garfield movie. I think you came out ahead. Yeah. I'm just saying. You're like, whew, that was pretty good.
Right.
That's a pretty
good. You wake
good...
up with both kidneys.
Yeah. And no bed bugs.
Yeah. You had to watch Garfield on loop.
All right. Yeah. You can book your Garfield themed guest room through June 6th at motel6garfield.com. I mean, why not leave that up? I mean, why do they got to take that down? You know, I assume at some point most of that stuff's just going to get stolen from the room. Anyway.
Right. 100%.
Yeah.
You want to go on the earlier end of this booking window so they actually have pillows in their room. Sure.
Or not, you know, you find your Garfield Motel 6 on eBay. Yes.
The orange curtains might still be there by June 6th. But
maybe with some, you know, cigarette smoke tinge to them. In Biloxi, too.
It's just the Biloxi one that's doing it?
That's an odd place. I don't know. Here, let me see. Such as the one in Biloxi. I guess there's others.
But such as.
We wanted to highlight if the Biloxi one that's worth putting forward to people, where are the other ones? In Midland, Texas, Garfield Motel 6.
Such destinations as Biloxi. Yes.
Well, they want to get rid of, you know, that early summer crew. Yeah. Who's going out. Right after school ends, we've got to hit the road to get to Biloxi.
Right. They've missed the spring breakers, but.
All right. Let's go to our main topic and relevant. Christianity Shouldn't Be a Weapon by Hillary Moore.
Okay.
All right, so what do you think? Should Christianity be a weapon? I'm going to go with no. All right.
I feel like that falls under the thou shalt.
Well, welcome. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Beyond Sunday. Yes.
It's going to be a tough one, huh? It's going to be like that.
Yeah. Christianity shouldn't be a weapon. Okay. So Hillary Moore is going to start off talking about the law.
Okay. As in the Torah law? Or
Like the United States government law. Ah. You know, so not the law of the Bible or the Torah law. All right. Individual can interpret an individual law as a sword or a shield. All right. So a law is used as a sword when it's used to weaponize, used to hurt people or denigrate the law itself, and used as a shield when it's employed to help people, protect them, or fortify the integrity of the law in general. We choose how we interpret the law, as a sword or a shield. And often it's to our benefit to see it as a weapon, to defend ourselves and our way of life from question, criticism, or, God forbid, change. Okay. So what are your familiarity with the law being a sword or a shield?
Well, I immediately thought of like red line districts when you said that. Like, sure. And I don't know the details exactly and the legality of how red line districts were set up. If you're not familiar with red line districts, definitely do some research on that. But essentially, it was a like post-integration method of keeping neighborhoods still pretty segregated, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's in just the first place my mind went is like, of course, we have many laws that are discriminatory. Or if they themselves are not written to be discriminatory, the way that they are used isn't a discriminatory method.
Sure, or interpreted, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think that that can happen. You know, and my familiarity with United States law is relatively limited. Mm-hmm. You know, I've watched Law and Order, and it was pretty good.
But none of us have been to law school here, right? Raise your hand.
No. Neither
no
law
sneaky,
school.
No sneaky lawyers.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, we know nothing about the law.
Yes. Again, I have watched Law and Order and A Few Good Men. It's a wonderful movie about.
So you're an expert.
That's a U.S. Marine law. So
Wow, very specific.
What about The Godfather? If we watched The Godfather,
There's not really any courtroom scenes in The Godfather. I mean, those more gangsters.
Right.
So,
My brother loved to watch Perry Mason when we were growing up, which is like a black and white lawyer show.
So it's old school.
Yeah.
It's
yeah. Very
okay.
Old school.
Wow. So, what's going on in the Nagel house?
With like,
did you have like a TV with a remote or did you have to walk up to it?
No, we watched a lot of old shows. We watched Speed Racer. We watched The Brady Bunch. Yeah. I grew up on like all the good 60s stuff. So.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't have cable as a kid. And so whenever we went on vacation, we would just watch TV Land. So like my vacation shows were all the Munsters and the Addams Family and Hogan's Heroes.
Interesting.
All this is to say, we're not law experts.
Yeah.
Yeah. The answer is no.
Well, I know, Pastor Kendra, you still watch network TV. You're a network TV watcher.
Oh, my gosh, Patrick. Man, just all the insults. Yeah.
I'm not insulting. Yes. I'm just pointing out. You watch network TV.
Well, yes, and there's a new series of NCIS coming out in the fall. Oh, boy. I just found out last night, and I'm very excited. So, yes, I still watch network TV.
Wow, interesting. And NCIS.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. Law.
It's got, yeah.
Yeah, Navy law.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Like the law, Christianity can also be used as a sword or a shield, and we Christians get to choose how we use it. All right, let's think through here. Are there ways we've seen Christians use Christianity as a sword or a shield?
Mm-hmm. Like within the church or in life in general?
Yes.
Both, yes, yes.
I mean, we see it with like baptism and communion. All the time, right? And
interesting. That would not be the first place I went.
Go ahead.
Say more.
Well, speak more on that.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like, especially when we think about, do I have to be a member of this church to be able to receive communion, right?
Yeah.
Do I have to be baptized to be able to be part of this community, right? Mm-hmm. So when we think about, what we would call sacraments here in the Lutheran church, these like important, pieces in our faith journey, how are they used as like, instead of like a stepping stone in our faith journey, like how are they used as like a stumbling block, right? Would be sort of how I think about it in like a sword shield type of thing.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're not baptized, so you're going to hell, right? Like those kinds of
sure.
Really stark differences.
Right. Yeah. Or even like at a minimum, like you're not baptized, so you can't take communion here, or you're not baptized, so you can't volunteer here, or whatever it is,
Yeah.
Which I don't think we do here.
No.
Yeah, but there, I have been places where that's a thing. We have a whole thing that we teach kids in particular about like the armor of God, right? About the sword of the spirit and the breastplate of righteousness.
That is from the Bible.
Right, so, which that
Yeah.
That is legitimate. There's some imagery there, right?
Yeah.
The breastplate of righteousness.
I mean, yeah, the Bible is filled with battle and war imagery. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just the reality. Like, one, we have legitimate battles and wars in the Old Testament, and the Bible does not let those things go when engaging with kind of like what is a spiritual life. Often it is, can be described as a battle, a fight, and it's filled with imagery of weapons and war. So, yeah, you wear the armor of God. The Bible is a sword, sometimes you call it a double-edged sword, you know? So it's not a katana. It's like a broadsword.
Serious thing.
Sure.
It's not a rapier.
No, it doesn't have any edges.
Right.
It's for poking.
It's pointy.
Yes.
It's definitely not.
It's definitely not that. Yes. Not a scimitar.
That's too curved. Too curved.
More of a lightsaber. You know, it's double. That's all edges all around.
Edges. Yeah.
Yeah. All the edges.
Literally all edges.
Bible's a lightsaber. That's my new book coming out.
Okay, we'll fix this in post. This whole section gone.
You know, I follow several Christian meme pages on Instagram. And oftentimes, you know, one of the Christian meme pages will post a thing about how, like, hey, Jesus says you should love everyone. You know, you feel like that's pretty given, right? Like, and you go to the comments of that meme and... let me tell you, there's a lot of people saying, like, actually, I don't have to do that.
Right. Or except for
except
group of people.
Yes. Yeah. Or a lot of, like, love everyone. Yes. Accept everything. No. Kind of a thing in the comment. That's how I read them in my brain.
Love the sinner. Hate the sin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that is always what Christianity is using as, like, a sword. Like, I don't have to do this loving act towards you because you are blank. And oftentimes, you know, those things can be because of race, gender, sexuality, all those things, you know, like have been or a different branch of Christianity have been used all those ways. Or we're the same branch of Christianity, but you vote differently than me. Mm-hmm. So I do not have to show you the love that is presented in the gospel. I get to use Christianity as a weapon against you.
I think the hard thing for me with this is, at least from my experience, oftentimes when I hear those types of responses, what's the underlying belief is from their perspective is like that they are using Christianity as a shield. Like they are protecting the integrity of their understanding of God, of their understanding. And so then we get into this difficult situation where like, I receive what's being said as a sword, but they are understanding it as a shield, right? And so even in the way in which, you know, we disagree, like our perspectives are just so different, I think that makes it really hard.
Sure.
When sometimes we're just, even our understanding of like what we mean by what we say, right, is...
Yeah.
What I hear is sort of like going against what I understand, you know, Christianity to be can also be seen from another perspective as... upholding its integrity, right?
Right.
For sure. Yeah, you know, it's odd here in America, despite being a majority Christian nation and every one of our presidents at very minimum paying lip service to being a Christian, right? At very minimum, like they say they're a Christian. There's a subset of Christians out there who are under full, you know, they're fully convinced that they are being persecuted for their Christian faith in America. Despite living in a majority Christian nation where the highest office in the land, at least they're giving lip service to Christianity. But they're fully convinced that they're being persecuted. And because they are, they're allowed to use Christianity in their mind, even though it's used as a weapon, they're thinking, like you said, as a shield, right? Like I'm defending my way of life, my point of view, and I do that by attacking you or tearing you down because you're ruining Christianity. You know, for us.
Well, even a shield can still be a weapon depending on what your intention is. You still brain somebody with a shield, so.
Like, yeah, it's entangled with a frying pan, you know?
Right, yeah.
Or Captain America.
Right,
yes. He has a very literal shield.
I like Disney princesses, you like Marvel. It's okay.
Well, I mean, I'm saying, fight. A frying pan is not a shield.
We're getting into a shield fight.
Well, she uses it as a weapon, so that's what I'm saying.
Captain America has a legit shield. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying, in the analogy.
Are you a Tangled hater?
I love Tangled. I think it's great. I look, hot take, Tangled better than Frozen, right?
Yes. Like,
there you go. So I'm not a Tangled hater. All right. I beg my fellow Christians, this is back to our article, to look inside themselves and take personal responsibility for our weaponization of faith, for its negative impact on our country, our neighbors, our church, and for our use of Christianity to validate and only our experience of reality, to protect only our way of life, to justify and facilitate our own pre-existing discrimination, anger, and even hatred. I think this is great. I think that this is a really good thing. I think, I'll be honest, I think most people are going to look at this and be like, yeah, I think she's right about those people. They should do that. And yeah, not me. And I think even myself a little bit, right? Like, I can admit that. Like, even myself, like, it's hard to necessarily look at myself and be like, how am I taking personal responsibility for the weaponization of faith in America? Mm-hmm. Especially when, from my perspective, I see it on a greater level, those across the religious aisle, and think, actually, I think they're doing this a lot worse than me. You know? what do we think about this, her paragraph here? All right, then.
I think she's very bold.
Okay.
And so I think in the same way, yeah, I think that for some folks, the instinct would be to just reject the paragraph entirely.
Yeah.
Right. And I think from my perspective, the hard thing, right, in being, I mean, we're a fairly decent sized church, right?
Sure.
Is that we have folks in our community who would probably respond positively and with more hesitancy. And so, you know, for me as one of the leaders here, for us as a community, how do we sit with having different perspectives about like what our role as a church should be, right? Mm-hmm. In making amends with other, you know, groups of Christians, with making amends with folks that are of different faith practices, you know? And so I think, you know, it's really special that we get to be involved with a lot of the interfaith work that goes on in the Woodlands and, you know, have some of those connections that help us build relationships and I think start to build bridges relationally with other faith communities, you know, whether they're Christian or not, and to be in some of those spaces. But yeah, I think it's complicated and I don't know that there's like a one right answer for it.
I guess my mind always goes to like, okay, well, what does it really look like to take responsibility for the way that faith has been weaponized, right?
Sure.
And like me as a human, like how do I do that? Especially when, you know, I don't have a whole bunch of instances that I can point to in my life where I can say, yes, I weaponized faith against, you know, people of other belief systems in this way. But I think, you know, we're having these conversations for one thing, you know, like we're on this podcast, we're having this conversation. You know, for me, it's important that when somebody who is having a conversation with me says something about Christianity that's maybe not super flattering to Christianity, that I listen and that I receive that, right? And I'm usually 9 times out of 10, I'm sympathetic to it because I'm like, yeah, I get it, you know? So those are, you know, listening and having the conversations, those are both really kind of basic ways to say, okay, I'm going to start figuring out how to, you know, take responsibility for this and maybe change the narrative a little bit.
Sure. I think it's a good place. This is not in the article, but I'll bring this up. Do you know what the Seven Mountain Mandate is?
No,
it sounds cool though. I've been to Seven Magic Mountains in Las Vegas.
Is that like the seven highest peaks on the seven highest or on the seven continents? Or something?
It is not.
that's a missed opportunity.
Those are all much cooler than this. The Seven Mountain Mandate is a Dominionist conservative Christian movement within Pentecostal and Evangelical Christianity. It holds there are seven aspects of societies that believers seek to conquer. The good of the culture. And you want to guess what any of those seven aspects of society would be?
Politics.
Government.
Sexuality.
Not so. Yeah. I'll tell you. So, okay. You know, family, religion, education, media, arts, entertainment, business, and government. Those will be the Seven Mountain Mandates.
Okay.
All right. And so the idea here is if Christians are at the top of all of those seven mountains, then we can shift our culture to being back to God, right? Like, and so we have, you know, Speaker of the House, Mr. Mike Johnson, is a Seven Mountain Mandate Dominionist.
Super.
So, I mean, so we definitely have people out there, you know, like I can acknowledge, all right, my role and kind of my community. Sometimes I've been a jerk when utilizing Christianity, or that I have not spoken the kindness online. But it's hard because, like, there are Christians out there who think we must dominate these aspects of society and conquer them in the name of Jesus.
A little bit more intense than I made a nasty comment on a Facebook post
So this is like in each of those areas, like I'm thinking of the arts and entertainment one, like if we just think Bill Gates, you know, or like someone connected to Apple or whatever.
Sure.
Right. So they need to be, what does it mean to be at the top? Like the most powerful person in a in an organization?
It probably means more than just, you know, for some of these, like one person at the top, you know, because
Like
arts
government
and entertainment,
could be the president, but.
Yeah. You know, that this would be, you know, like we've got to submit, you know, or will Disney underneath our means, you know, like. And you'll kind of see this every time Disney would make a movie that has, you know, a character or theme that Christians don't like. Mm-hmm. We got to come out in full force against it. Right.
Yeah.
Like we can't just be like, yeah, the movie existed. Some people liked it. I didn't, you know, and whatever, and move on. Like there are aspects of Christianity like, no.
Oh, we've got like book banning.
We've got to not only we've got to let Disney know they're not allowed to make movies like that anymore. Like that we want them to fail. You know, financially and culturally, you know, like, so this would be kind of this, like, we're here to conquer these things. And so maybe this means, you know, there are Christian media companies out there, like, we've got to produce our versions of entertainment to dominate the culture. Now, typically, I've seen Christian media, it's not usually not that great, like, because it's preaching to a choir, right? And, like, it cares more about that than it does about being a good movie or being a good TV show. Yep. It cares more about how do I preach to my the message matters more than the medium. And so like we're, and Christians were willing to kind of, who like that stuff are willing to give a pass to a poor medium for a positive message.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that this is kind of like, for me, when I think of like, okay, Christianity being used as a sword, this is this is bigger than just a church, you know, excluding people from coming to communion based on their own theology. This is bigger than an Instagram comment page saying, like, actually, you know, I don't have to accept, you know, LGBTQ issues in culture to love somebody. You know, like, this is, like, there are Christians out there who are like, yeah, we're going to conquer this world for the sake, for in the name of Jesus. We're here to conquer.
Right.
And I think that Christianity paralleled, or at least my version of Christianity paralleled with that, it becomes much more challenging to kind of engage with, like, yeah, that is Christianity being used as a sword.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we stand against that is much more complicated and more difficult. Maybe, you know, it starts on our podcast saying, like, look, I'm against the Seven Mountains. Like,
the Seven Mountain Mandate. Wasn't this on that Duggars?
They would be
Shiny Happy People documentary.
Yes, the Duggars are a Seven Mountain Mandate family.
So. Okay. Yeah. That's, if you haven't watched that documentary, I recommend watching that. It's a little eye-opening.
Can you read the seven again, Patrick?
Sure, you bet. Yeah. That is family, religion, education, media, arts and entertainment, business, and government.
Interesting. I'm just thinking about, I mean, I think one of the most challenging things for me to wrestle with as a Christian is war.
Yeah.
Mm. And you know, this like question of war and peace, and like, should we go to war, and how do we go to war, and like, what does it mean to, you know, and I have friends who are chaplains in the military, and so there's all these nuances and layers to it, but I'm curious where that type of like physical conquering, if that would fall into any of these, because I think this could apply for any one maybe country,
sure,
right, or like cultural group, but from, I mean, if this is like a global mission,
yeah,
right.
You know, when Christianity looks different in different countries, right? What, I don't know. I'm thinking big picture, but
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, and is this just for, because it's from the U.S., right?
Yeah, 100%.
Is this just for the U.S. or is it, once that's applied to the U.S., are they then taking it
and
trying to apply it elsewhere?
I imagine most of this kind of Christians care a lot about the U.S. and a little about the rest of the world, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, like, the U.S. is the city on the hill. It's the new city on the hill. Like, it's the new shining light. It's the new Israel, right? God's country. All right. Back to the article here. Free will was good enough for God. Why then do his earthly followers insist upon conversion by sword, physical or legislature, rather than using the faith to look inside themselves and purify their own hearts? That's a great question. Conversion by force is lazy. It abolishes us of our duty to live the faith and inspire faith in others, and it absolves us of personal responsibility. I'm 100% on board with this sentence, this paragraph right here. And I do think it's lazy. Like, I think that's, like, I like that she uses this word, lazy, because I think, like, conversion by federal mandate, or, like, if we vote for the right Christian policies or Christian leaders, the nation will be Christian, you know, is this idea of, like, I can check a box on once every couple of years, and I did my duty, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to actually change inside myself and still do my duty for Jesus. You know, like, it makes it where I can feel good about doing my Christian duty without actually having to do a Christian duty, right? And I said duty, I know.
Twice.
I think that's really interesting. When the Global Missions team was getting ready to do our, like, Lutherans Around the World little Sunday school event last fall, I was doing research about Lutherans in different countries and, like, what that was like. And there's a number of, you know, especially in the Scandinavian region, a number of countries that, like, would be affiliated, right, with the Lutheran faith, right, mm-hmm. with the Lutheran Christian faith. And so folks for many years were required, right, by law to be Lutherans, right?
Yeah.
And but then, like, my parents went and visited. Oh, where did they go? They went up in that area too. And they're like, there's not that many Lutheran churches. I mean, it's just, you know, being able to check a box on a piece of paper, right, for any sort of legal or, like, citizenship purposes is not the same thing as, you know, embodying a faith in and out every day. And so I think it's just an interesting thing to wrestle with, right? Like, if we can check a box and say 100% of our citizens are Christians, and then, like, there's all of these un-Christian activities and things going on within the community, like, it comes, for me, it's like a quality versus quantity type thing. Like, is having a larger number of Christians
without, is that better?
I don't know.
Sure.
I think the laziness thing is really interesting. I was actually just having a conversation with somebody yesterday that, like, that is how I think of, like, very fundamentalist belief systems, or anything that is, like, very, like, black and white, to me is lazy. It is mentally lazy, right? Because you are trying to put the world in, like, two separate boxes instead of really leaning into that tension of, you know, there's a lot that doesn't fit here, and there's a lot of nuance, and it's that, I get it. That's a more uncomfortable place to hang out than, like, this good, that bad, you know, but the world is a lot more complicated and complex than that. And just see so much of that, like, even in, you know, religious beliefs that seem, like, very rigid, and that there's a lot of work that goes into it. To me, it's like a certain level of mental laziness, you know?
Yeah. You know, the reality is the call from Jesus, you know, the two greatest commandments, love God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those are hard. Those are things that we need to work on daily. Like, every day I need to get up and choose to do those things, because they are not necessarily completely within my own nature. Like, I've got to figure out every day, how do I love my neighbor? Mm-hmm. And I got to figure out every day, how do I love God better in my life? So those things are difficult. Mm-hmm. And the idea of, well, if I utilize the tools of government, media, education to do those things on my behalf, then, I'm absolving myself of, like, responsibility to grow and change in the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of, like, talking to other people about Jesus is incredibly difficult. Like, I think we've mentioned that on our podcast when it comes to evangelism. I think most of us find that an incredibly difficult process of engaging in faithful conversations with our neighbors. Shouting at them is much easier. Like, that is much easier thing to do.
Ignoring them.
Ignore or shout. You know, both those things are much easier to do. And if you shout at them and they reject it, well, you're like, well, I did my job. Like, I did what Jesus told me to do,
right.
And I can pat myself on the back, go home and sleep well because I shouted and they didn't listen, and now it's up to them. Like, their you know, salvation is on their shoulders, and I did my part. You know, like, I think it is this, like, incredibly, for me, a difficult place to land. Now, admittedly, I can admit there are times in faith I can be lazy as well. Like, mm-hmm. I can usually not. I want the government to do my job for me. It's like, I don't want anybody to do that job. Like,
yeah, you know, like, no job.
So I can admit that there is lazy, you know, lazy faith is something that can happen, mm-hmm. in my own world or my own life. I think it just looks differently, right? Because I'm not trying to say, like, my laziness equals let's use the government as a sword.
Right.
My laziness more equals, like, let's just leave everything in stasis, right? Like, let's just, people figure it out on themselves. Because she does mention, and I think this is important here, she kind of ends with, like, these, like, bullet points that I think are really neat. New people are not brought to faith when we simply beat the war drums with the choir. New people are not brought to faith when we support, engage in, or fail to speak up against intentionally divisive, inappropriate, untruthful, or unprofessional political rhetoric, no matter which side of the political spectrum it comes from. New people are not brought to faith when we care more for our party's own political benefit than we do truth. And new people are not brought to faith when we support our laws that only benefit ourselves and that perpetuate injustice. And I think that this is great stuff, right? Like, mm-hmm. like, nobody is looking at this and being like, I'm intrigued. Like, oh, you guys are only concerned about your own well-being within the church. You only, yeah. you know, that you cheer when politicians say, we're going to protect Christianity in America. But I'm not a Christian, so why would I want to be more? Unless I'm, like, seeking to fit in just so the sword doesn't come after me, right? I can be a token here so the sword never comes my direction. But I think that this is the reality. You're like, that's not going to work. You can't change culture with a seven mountain mandate. I do not believe. Jesus does not do this. God does not do this. And the fact that Christians are like, we got to do this now, I think is, why can't we trust that Jesus and God's way is better?
Yeah, I've just been kind of mulling over how the commandments that Jesus gives us, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Three out of the four are about us and what's going on in our own hearts, right?
Sure.
And then the fourth one is still about us, but about what we are doing for other people.
Yeah.
And we tend to make it all about what everybody else is doing or not doing.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just such an interesting kind of, you know, Jesus does this over and over again, just subverts expectations, right? You had the Pharisees that are very much that outward facing, like, what is everybody else doing or not doing? What are they doing wrong? You know, that kind of stuff. And Jesus kind of just twists that on its head and says, you know, here's all this stuff about you that you need to keep your own house clean, right?
Yeah,
yourself, not even just your community, yourself. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, you need to do stuff for other people.
Absolutely. All right, any other thoughts here on our sword or shield?
I think what's challenging for me about this Seven Mountain mandate, and maybe I just don't know enough about maybe their theology that's driving it. I could
probably
make
do.
Some assumptions.
You probably,
yeah, probably, we can
probably,
probably,
do,
probably
do,
make some assumptions
yeah.
about it. But, I mean, I think what I'm wrestling with is, like, in my own life, and I think even in Jesus's life too, like, we are shaped by the people that we're in relationship with, you know?
Yeah.
My roommate in college is Church of Christ. I mean, comes from a very, like, conservative Christian background, and parts of that made it really hard to be mm-hmm. friends and to be roommates. And part of that, I hope, have helped me to, like, be more empathetic to some of the more, like, literal interpretations of the Bible and things like that, right? And that's shaped how I see the way that we, you know, engage with scripture and the mm-hmm. way that we function as a church community and all those sorts of things,
yeah.
right? And,
yeah.
like, as Jesus is, you know, gathering disciples and, you know, entering into different communities, like, we see the way in which those relationships that he's building are changing those people, are changing the way that he's communicating with his followers and
yeah.
with the way that impact ripples outwards. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, what if we had, you know, government and education, you know, checked off? Like, how does transformation in those areas change the way in which maybe we even want to enter in to transforming those others? And I don't know if that's maybe I'm like intellectualizing it too much, but I'm just thinking like the way that I believed 6 months ago isn't even the same way that I believe now, because the relationships and the people that are in my life now are continuing to transform. Right. Yeah.
I don't believe a 7-mile mandate people are having the same kind of self-awareness or kind of like thoughtfulness about this.
What they mean by Christian is Republican. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is, let's take public school dollars and send it to private schools, right? Like, because we want kids in religious education.
Yeah.
That's going to solve the problems.
Yeah. I think, I mean, what my hope is, I don't know. I think it's hard to be in relationship with people, but I think when we're willing to be in those like in betweens, right? Even if we don't come out changing our minds, like hopefully we can at least remember that God loves the person that we're talking to, you know, or the community that they're fighting for, even if we vehemently disagree.
Yeah.
And that might not mean that things are going to change, you know, but I hope that at least will contribute to our own, you know, practice of loving God, right?
Right.
Even when it's really hard.
Well, and I think, you know, lastly here for me, Jesus uses his words and, you know, his relationship with the Father here as a sword and shield in scripture. Like, I think there are times and places where we can use Christianity as a sword. I don't think it's like there is no sword option here, because Jesus uses, you know, his relationship with the Father and his presence on earth as a shield to defend a woman at the well, to defend a woman caught in adultery, to defend this, you know, Jesus is accused of this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Like, that's who he is. Like, he's defending them. Like, one of his most famous parables is about, you know, a good Samaritan defending or caring for somebody who's beaten and broken on the side of the road. And the times where he uses his words and his message is at a sword is almost entirely against religious authorities who claim to speak on behalf of God with no compassion for those underneath them, right? Like, that they claim that they are the pious ones, that they're the correct ones, they're the ones who've gotten it figured out, and they're the ones who know God and the will of God, and yet walk by the broken people of this world with judgment and anger against them. Those are the ones people call a brood of vipers. Those are the ones that Jesus clashes with, criticizes, and make sure that they know he is against them. Like, or he's against that message, right? Like, he's against that point of view. And so I think it's sometimes so weird that it looks like there are pockets of Christianity, you know, who walk away from the Gospels. You're like, you know who should be like? Those guys,
right?
Like, those are the guys that got it right.
Right,
and like their lives look far more similar to them than it does look to, you know, a broken woman at the feet of Jesus,
right,
who he is defending from stoning, or you know, or those that are, you know, being defended by Jesus. Like, they constantly land on like, yeah, we should look like more like the Pharisees and Sadducees.
History repeats itself, you know?
Yeah, it's just such a bizarre thing that we can kind of go read the Gospels of Jesus and ultimately emulate the quote-unquote villains of the story. Mm-hmm. And the obvious ones, right, that are like, Jesus is against those people, and that's who I look most like. You know, like, that is so weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? All right. Well, that brings us to the end here. If you liked what you heard on this episode of Beyond Sunday, you know, we got a website, beyondsundaypodcast.com. We've got a bunch of episodes out there. We're narrowing in on episode 300.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's pretty incredible, right?
We're still talking.
We still have things to say, shockingly. You know, you figure you'd be like, at some point, we got to like run out of things to say. And we would sit here just in silence. You know, like, what more can we say to one another?
It's a meditation podcast.
Right. Just us breathing into the mic.
Yeah. But somehow, we still keep figuring it out. So if you want to, you know, write us anything, I think we're at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know how you see Christianity, sword or shield, 7-mountain mandates, your opinions, your thoughts. We want to know what our listenership is thinking so we can address some of those concerns or issues. All right, well, I guess thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.